your turn to shake it up.
Shake it up. Oh my gosh. So I was recently at an event and somebody asked me, well, asked the crowd to back that dollar sign up. And no one did.
Yeah, well, he also asked them to do the wave and no one did.
Actually, a surprising amount of people did that.
Did they? I didn't notice because I heard, let's do the wave. And I was like, and I'm checked out.
We didn't. We definitely didn't. But actually quite a few people did. I was a little surprised. But anyway.
Were they all white people? Because likely. I feel like the wave is a white people thing.
He was a little bit of a lackluster MC, and we figured after a while he just kind of Googled things people enjoy.
Things that get white people shook.
Oh, no. Number one, back that ass up. Number two, the wave.
Do the wave. Welcome back to another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa.
Hi, guys.
It is April 15th.
Yes.
And first things first, you know, we want to say we hope you guys enjoyed the last episode.
Yes. We had a lot of fun putting that together. It was all fake. None of that is true. Yeah,
unfortunately, the Walla Walla White Snake is not a real cryptid.
Exactly.
I wish it was.
I do have a friend that was involved in an accident with a CRV, and the CRV did get away, and so that part of it was true, and I do hope he gets better, but the rest of it, although do pay attention to the CRV drivers out there, you may notice a pattern. Even Sammy knows that I do have a platform about that. Obviously, yes. I got a little passionate last week, last time.
She likes to get up on her soapbox about CRVs, but it was fun to record.
That was really fun.
Tess approached me with the idea and was like, how about for April 1st, we make up stuff. And I was like, okay, that's a great idea.
Of course, then I found out very quickly I'm the idiot because it's really, really hard to make up a conspiracy.
And I found out really easy to write about a mythological creature.
Exactly.
Make one up. I was like, okay, I got this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was actually surprised that mine didn't go on longer than it did. Like, I thought for sure, I was like, oh, mine's going to last like a half hour. And it was like, no, I clocked in at like 20 minutes.
20 minutes is perfect. So did I. But, oh, well. Well, at least you guys didn't have to waste an entire hour on our BS.
So we're back with this episode April 15th.
How are you guys?
Yeah, how are you?
You're moving and grooving and happy, and it's it's almost Easter? Is Easter?
No, it's a week away.
It's a week away. Okay, yeah. Cool. Easter's
Speaking
a week away.
Speaking of moving and grooving, when this comes out, 2 days from this episode airing, Sammy moves to Mississippi.
Sad.
So I know.
Bye, Sammy.
It's sad.
No. But we are going to continue. We're going to practice a whole bunch, and we will come back with another season. Yeah. And you guys will never know the difference.
Yeah, well, because the thing is like we said last week, or not last week, 2 weeks ago, we are going to record this entire season together. And then, so season three, when we start back up in August, will be with us separated.
Yeah.
But by that point, you know, you'll have had the entire first season. I'll have had time to settle in and set up my recording studio. And we'll have done a couple of practice sessions. And yeah, we'll already be ready to go by the time the next season comes
out.
So you guys won't notice.
And awesome. And we're very excited. And it'll be a new adventure. And we all get to be a part of it too. And if you guys want to help us support and keep this going, please head over to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/conspiriesandcryptids. We've got all kinds of tiers, all kinds of ways you guys can help. We've got scripts up there. We have, you guys can pick topics depending on, you know, what tier you choose and stuff. So please go check that out. And patreon.com/conspiriesandcryptids. And you can also check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com.
Yep. All right, so now we're going to jump right back into Penny for Our Thoughts.
Penny for Your Thoughts.
Like I said at the beginning, it's your turn to shake it off.
Yeah, because every time we shake a penny for your thoughts to decide who goes first, I am shaking it up. Sammy gets to pick which side
heads.
Gets to go first.
It's tails. Oh, Tess gets to go 2 weeks in a row.
Ah.
Okay, all right.
That's International Women's Day for you.
Again, because we're still recording on International Women's
Day. Exactly. It's still March.
All right. So
I'm very excited to talk about this one.
Oh, I can tell. You're bouncing.
Ah. Okay, this one's very cool because this one. Okay, so recently, so at work we do the SPCA Pet of the Week, and recently we had a woman in who the SPCA Pet of the Week, adoptable Pet of the Week, was named Tesla.
Okay,
my name is Tessa.
Right. Yeah.
So I respond. My name is so unusual that as soon as I hear Te or Tess, I go, what? Uh-huh. Like, or even Essa, I'll go, what? And this woman had a microphone on and I'm producing. And so I can hear everything she's saying. And every time I would hear Tessa, no, stop that. Tessa, sit. And I'm like, I'm sitting. What do you want from me? But of course, she's talking to Tesla,
the dog.
The dog.
You know? Oh, that's great. I love that.
So, but recently I was, so related to that, I was thinking about, I was online and I saw this video of this new type of 3D printing technique that was super, super cool. It looks like something directly out of Star Trek. It made a, like a small, like the little thinker statue.
Yeah.
It made it out of light.
What?
Right? That's what I said.
Like hard light?
Like, okay. So currently most 3D printers work by either depositing or melting building material into successive layers, right? Like see it, it just kind of builds it out of. So, but that can make products look a little chunky, right? Mm-hmm. So this technique is created out of UC Berkeley by some researchers there. It's nicknamed the Replicator, again, out of Star Trek. Uh-huh. It's a new zero-waste process using light to create smooth-edged items out of resin. And it's using a standard projector, nothing special. Mm-hmm. The same one that your professor fights with you for the first 15 minutes of class while that latte you chugged in the hallway settles in your, hot in your diaphragm and decides in its path and pace to your bladder.
Oddly specific, but yes, okay.
Give it 10. Using a standard projector like that one, hooked up to a laptop, those patterns are then projected onto a rotating glass cylinder containing a light-sensitive resin composed of a combination of liquid polymers, photosensitive molecules, and dissolved oxygen.
Okay.
Then when it's activated by the projected light, the molecules suck out the oxygen in specific three-dimensional areas of the resin, which leaves just what you want behind in the resin.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'll post the video to our Facebook page. It's super, super cool.
I'm definitely going to watch that. That sounds so cool.
But that got me thinking about inventions and how the manipulation of light can be used to do both great and terrible things.
Right. Like a death ray.
You know where I'm going.
Do I? Oh, my God.
You know where I'm going.
Are my super villain dreams about to come true?
So for those of you who think Edison invented the light bulb, you're wrong. It was aliens. Kidding. It wasn't really Edison. It was Tesla.
Yes.
No, that's not the conspiracy theory, but we will get there.
Okay.
But let's talk about Tesla for a second.
Yes. Okay.
Nikola Tesla was a big proponent of women in the STEM for his time and spoke openly about a great society of equality between the sexes. And I really like this guy. Mm-hmm. Aside from the fact our names are very, very close.
Yes. Yep.
So Nikola Tesla was a Serbian-American inventor, electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, and futurist who is best known for his contribution to the design of the modern alternating current, or the AC of AC/DC fame, the electricity supply system, right? He was born in 1856 and raised in the Austrian Empire, or what we know as Croatia today.
Okay. Yep.
His father was an Eastern Orthodox priest, and his mother, whose father was also a priest, had a knack for creating handmade tools and mechanical appliances and the ability to memorize Serbian epic poems at length. Like, she could remember these epic poems in Serbian just off the top of her head.
That's awesome. Also, shout out to preacher's kids.
I know, right? I know a lot of them.
We're special people.
You are. You really are. And I somehow surround myself with a lot of you. You're great people, though.
You need Jesus. Apparently.
Yeah, apparently. That's debatable. But that's because he and his mother, Duka, had an eidetic memory.
Oh, those are cool. Yeah,
isn't that cool? So for those of you guys that don't know, we often refer to it offhandedly as a photographic memory, but they're actually technically a little different. Mm-hmm. According to scholar Annette Koyosky-Taylor, she wrote in eidetic memory, a person has an almost faithful mental image, snapshot, or photograph of an event in their memory. However, eidetic memory is not limited to visual aspects of memory and includes auditory memories as well as various sensory aspects across a range of stimuli associated with a visual image. Basically, like the square and rectangle argument. Photographic memories are like a subcategory of a broader topic.
Okay, yeah.
So in 1870, Tesla moved really, really far north to Karlovac to attend a private high school there. And it was there that he met this physics professor who turned him on to playing with electricity. Remember, this was like super new. So the fact that a teacher could play with this like arc of electricity and control it, like we only knew it as lightning at that, like that point.
Yeah, exactly.
So then, like, he meets this professor who goes, oh, my God, you can play with this stuff? Like, what is this? So because of his fantastic memory, he could perform complex calculus equations in his head, leading professors to believe he was cheating. He finished high school in 3 years, graduating in 1873. But he had to return home to his family that year, and shortly after arriving, he contracted cholera, which almost killed him. Like,
how did I not know that?
Like, we almost lost Nikola Tesla to cholera. When he was, like, fresh out of high school.
Isn't there a vaccine for that?
I think now? I think so.
Once again.
I feel like we don't hear very much about cholera, but once again, vaccinate your kids. But he did survive, and he dodged the army a few times, exploring the mountains before enrolling in an Austrian polytechnic, the university, in 1875. He fell off the deep end, though, and never actually graduated from the university. He was sleeping, like, he famously only sleeps 2 hours a day or only slept 2 hours a day and then would take like little naps during the rest of the day.
Right.
And because he was like, I only need to sleep like this. And then he would just kind of recharge his batteries. But there's a record of some letters that he sent to his father saying, I'm going to kill myself if I stay in this university. He wasn't sleeping. He was working constantly. There was just no stopping him. And he was so overworked. So he just ditched school and just left. And then
he needed to get out of that toxic environment.
Exactly. So then he worked as a draftsman to cover up the fact he dropped out of school before eventually working for the Continental Edison Company, installing electricity in buildings in Paris. So he was already working for Edison, and that's part of the reason he actually came to the United States, because in 1884, his boss was called to the U.S. to run a project there within the Continental Edison Company.
Right.
And he asked that Tesla be allowed to come with him.
Okay.
So that's how he ended up in the States.
Ooh, that's cool.
So we're going to fast forward a little bit because he has a very, very interesting history. I highly recommend you guys look into to Nikola Tesla. But on Tesla's 78th birthday in 1934, he made headlines by announcing that he had created the death ray that would stop an army from 200 miles away. So, and the way these birthday parties started, it was actually, it's kind of like a Great Gatsby thing. This one reporter threw him a party for one of his birthdays about, it was in like 1930, it was about 4 years before this. And it was just kind of a, hey, Tesla's turning 80, or let's see, he
78 and 30.
See, he would have been 74. He's turning 74. Let's kind of party. Let's see what's going on. And he made an announcement that was really popular. And he loved the attention so much that every single birthday he would throw these Great Gatsby style parties, hoping tons of people would come, and he would make this huge announcement. So on his 78th birthday, he announces the death ray.
Okay. Yeah, this is a man after my own heart.
Right?
Make a huge announcement that you have some death ray in order to get attention. Yeah, exactly. That sounds like something I would do.
Obviously, it was never actually developed. It got a lot of attention, but it wasn't actually developed. So the Nikola Tesla was eventually found dead in January of 1943 in his hotel room in New York City. The official reports at the time said he died on January 7th, but notes later released with some of the other papers revealed that he died a day later on January 8th.
Okay.
Representatives of the U.S. government's Office of Alien Property seized many documents relating to the 86-year-old inventor's work. So they, as soon as he died, they swooped in and they were like, we're getting rid of it. Also, by the way, alien here meaning foreigner, not what you guys are thinking.
Right, okay. I got excited there for a second.
Remember, it was also the climax of World War II, and Tesla had already claimed to have created a powerful particle beam weapon known as the Death Ray that would have proved invaluable. So they're like, we need to get all these notes now, especially since it hadn't been developed. So rather than risk the technology falling into the hands of the wrong side mm-hmm. during that time, the government swooped in and took possession of everything. Tesla's estate was supposed to go to his nephew, Sava Kosanovich, who at the time was the Yugoslav ambassador to the U.S., thanks to his uncle's connections as the most respected Serbian inventor in the country. Mm-hmm. The government's excuse was that Kosanovich was trying to snatch the documents from him after his death, hoping to provide vital information to the enemy.
Of course. Right.
That was, you know, what they said. Oh, yeah, we need to swoop in there and go take everything.
He's going to give the death rate of the USSR.
And before we give it to him, we need to make sure what's in this. And right. It's like, I mean, in a way, I kind of understand because they're playing with some stuff that we did not understand yet.
Yeah.
But at the same time... Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah, at the same time, it's like, yeah, that's kind of something. Okay.
What happened to those files is still technically a mystery, and so is what was actually in them. Under the Freedom of Information Act in 2016, about 250 pages of Tesla-related documents were declassified by the FBI. More of the documents were released, the latest batch coming in March of last year, but there are still a lot of documents missing. In May of last year, the History Channel did a 5-part series on the Tesla files and what was revealed from them. And we'll scratch the surface of that a little bit. But if you want more information, I don't want to regurgitate what they have. So, you know, add that to your watch list. Go watch that. So in 1952, a U.S. escort declared Kosanovich was the rightful heir to his uncle's estate. And Tesla's files and other materials were sent to Belgrade, Serbia.
Okay.
While the FBI originally recorded about 80 trunks of information among Tesla's effects, only 60 arrived in Belgrade. So where are the other 20 trunks?
Sorry.
Exactly. So why did the Office of Alien Property take this? It was created in 1817 to take stuff from alien or from the enemies after World War I. It was reinstated again by Roosevelt during World War II, and then the FBI repeatedly says in their notes that they did not seize the materials at the time, that they were glad that they didn't. They're like, we didn't take these. The Office of, like, Alien, like, Property took these.
Right.
We didn't do it. And in 1966, Lyndon B. Johnson got rid of the office entirely. He was like, this is kind of a little shady.
More than a little shady.
Well, it's a little bit.
Pretty shady.
And herein lies the biggest problem with the theory, because we don't actually know what was seized then. We don't know what's actually missing, if anything.
Oh, that's fair.
Because it's entirely likely we consolidated everything into 60 boxes.
Yeah, that's possible.
And just pared everything down, because he was also a scientist. We, you know, creative people and scientists, they may not necessarily be the most organized people. Yeah. They may be, like, all over the place. So he may have had a lot of stuff, and we just kind of, you know...
Right.
We Marie Kondo'd his boxes.
The KonMari method on Tesla's work.
Exactly. So where could it be? It is possible that they packed the 80 trunks worth of materials into 60 trunks. It's also possible we kept some. He was also convinced his plan would build the ultimate defense weapon. Mind you, this was not necessarily about killing people. It was about ending conflicts aggressively. In 1937, Tesla started reaching out to other countries asking for finances on what he called the peace beam. So not a death ray, but a peace beam.
Oh, okay. That's not something I'm interested in.
Of all the countries, though, to receive this proposal, the Soviet Union was the most interested, and some stories say he received about $25,000 from them.
Really? For this to develop the peace beam.
Exactly. And if you want to do the math, that adds up to about $450,000 today awarded him to build this thing. So it wasn't millions. I wouldn't say, like, it's not the kind of cash they dole out today for stuff like that.
But it was still a decent chunk of change.
That's still a pretty good chunk of change.
Hmm.
3 weeks after Tesla's death, an electrical engineer with MIT was asked to evaluate some of the papers to determine whether they contained, quote, any ideas of significant value. In a nutshell, he said they didn't, and they were mostly notes of a speculative, philosophical, or promotional nature with no new ideas to be found inside, no death ray, and no big deal, right? Take a wild guess who that MIT engineer might be.
Edison.
Nope.
I have no idea. Wait. Elon Musk.
This is I mean, he is probably a guy that can time travel, I'm sure, but it's 1937.
Oh, yeah, no, never mind. Yeah, I have no idea.
John G. Trump, the uncle of the other famous one.
No.
The J in Donald J. Trump.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Reviewed the papers and said there's nothing in this.
So that means Donald Trump might have a death ray.
Or access to the papers that know how to build one.
I'll bet he has one.
I'm sure. I mean, he's got a gold toilet. I'm sure he might have one. But I may not know how to use it. I don't know.
I hope he doesn't have a death ray.
I don't know.
I hope he has the peace ray.
Right? I mean, despite John G. Trump's dismissal of Tesla's notes, the military did try to incorporate particle beam weaponry in the decades following World War II, notably the Reagan Strategic Defense Initiative, or what was colloquially referred to as Star Wars. Ooh. Not the movie, but
right.
Within Ooh. The, yeah. Isn't that interesting?
So many twists and turns here.
I know. And even though Nikola Tesla never published any of the theories of magnetic resonance, nor publicly discussed his principles of optical invisibility, his name is often linked to an Operation Rainbow project, also known as the Philadelphia Experiment, which allegedly took place on October 1943 and claimed to have rendered the U.S. Navy destroyer escort USS Eldridge invisible.
I love that. That's a great story.
And again, there's no official record on that.
No, there isn't.
But it's believed that the Tesla papers may have had something to do with that.
Dude, like the Philadelphia report, though. Oh, my God. Like, read the Wikipedia article on that.
That'll be another episode.
It's absolutely nuts. Like, I know you're probably going to talk about it at some point, but just to give, like, little insights of what I know about the Philadelphia Project. Yeah, they basically, they rendered this entire, like, warship invisible, but when they brought it back to being visible and went on board, they were like, it caused problems, and like crew members were like melded into the ship's structure, you know, like bodies were fused into the metal of the ship's structure, and you know, like pieces of metal were like cleanly cut in half, and
so, you know, it was perfected. Basically
it was like it didn't go invisible so much as it went into a different dimension, and that dimensional rift caused problems.
So weird.
It's so creepy.
We will talk about it in another episode, because otherwise this episode would be hours long if I had to go into that. But yes, it's very cool. So yes, that is also related to
that's
the Tesla papers.
Okay, cool.
Also in 1945, there was an operation on particle beam weaponry that was codenamed Project Nick.
Okay.
It was conducted.
Not a very catchy name, but okay.
You know. Conducted by the U.S. Air Force, it was based on the missing files of Nikola Tesla. Copies of Tesla's papers were sent to the Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. Specific details of the project have never been published, but it was heavily funded and under the direction of Brigadier General Lawrence C. Craigie.
Okay.
He was a career Air Force officer. He was the first military jet pilot in 1942 when he flew the Bell XP-59. Mm-hmm. And his name also appears in some conspiracy theory websites for having known about alien bodies at Area 51.
Of course.
So another one. So our aliens get tied again into Tesla papers.
This is a very big, like, all-encompassing conspiracy.
Very much so. These papers.
So many branches.
Like, if you think Tesla can he contributed to a lot of things that we already take advantage of today, can you imagine what we don't even know about?
So basically, like, Tesla's papers are kind of like the X-Files.
Like, essentially.
The Tesla files.
They could be. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Ooh. So now there's plenty of question around this topic, but as I mentioned before, Tesla is responsible for a lot of conveniences that we take advantage of today. So who had really invented the light bulb? Now they say Edison perfected the work of... Oh, iPad down. Perfected the work of about 20 other scientists.
Yeah, I have so, heard that.
And then like he came up with the incandescent light bulb that we know of today and still use today. But when we discuss Nikola Tesla, the argument over who invented the light bulb tends to come up. Tesla and Edison were intellectual nemeses, but as I mentioned before, Tesla once worked under the famous inventor as part of the reason he came to the United States in the first place. But the true argument between these two was over the war of currents in the 1880s over whose electrical system would power the world, Tesla's AC system or Edison's rival direct current or DC power. Those debates can go into some pretty murky electrical storms of brain power, and I will not attempt to navigate or understand them. But what we need to know is that eventually Edison ended up, I think, pretty much winning out, right, yeah. Producer Ian? Yes, that's confirmation. So it's also pretty well documented by the FBI that the removal of the property was done in an orderly fashion in the presence of several witnesses, and a certificate of ownership was issued to his nephew. Mm-hmm. Of course, that doesn't mean that some things didn't get lost in translation mm-hmm. or in the moving within the department once mm-hmm. it was transported.
Right.
And also, I thought this was kind of interesting. There's actually even more missing files that belong to Tesla.
Oh, my God.
In the early hours of March 13th, 1895, or 1895, sorry. See, Sammy has issues with centuries. I have issues with 19s versus 18s. The building on South Fifth Avenue in New York caught fire,
okay.
which is where he had his lab.
Yeah.
It started in the basement, but the fire burned so hot, his whole lab on the fourth floor collapsed onto the second. It not only set back a ton of his projects, but it destroyed a collection of early notes and research material, models, demonstration material that we'll never get back.
Oh my God.
So he may have been onto stuff that we'll never
know about
because he lost all of his notes. Now he does have a photographic memory, so I'm sure he could recreate a lot of that stuff, yeah. but that's a lot of lost
that's
work.
That's a lot of lost work. It's like your hard drive failing on your computer.
Oh no. Your fourth floor collapsed onto the second. Oh no.
Although I doubt my work was nearly as consequential as Tesla's.
So yeah, really. So, I mean we just podcast.
We just podcast.
He makes electricity. Well, he directs electricity into useful
He creates death
technology.
Rays.
Yes.
We just talk about death rays.
The last thing I wanted to mention about Tesla, and I have a so when you think about flying cars and stuff mm-hmm. and how every time like somebody like Elon Musk pops up and they're like, oh, we're going to have flying cars by the year 2025 mm-hmm. and it's sooner than you think and we can have it. Okay. We can't drive on roads without killing each other.
We've talked about this already.
Exactly. So you already know my feeling about flying cars, right? So in an interview with the New York Herald in 1911, Tesla talked about creating a flying car.
Okay.
My flying machine, he says, quote, will have neither wings nor propellers. You might see it on the ground and you would never guess it was a flying machine. Yet it will be able to move at will through the air in any direction with perfect safety at higher speed than we have yet reached. Regardless of weather and oblivious of holes in the air or downward currents, it will ascend in such currents as if desired. It can remain absolutely stationary in the air, even in wind, for a great length of time. Its lifting power will depend upon any such delicate devices as the bird has to employ on such a positive mechanical action. Now, for reference, the average train at the time could go about 82 miles an hour. And that was probably one of the faster things that we could.
So slow, but yeah, okay.
Right? So it could probably move. But again, what makes you think we have any right to the skies when we can't?
Yeah.
But at the time, there were also fewer people, too. So there were probably a lot less accidents.
Still, like that description, it reminded me of like Willy Wonka's like omnidirectional elevator.
Yes, yes. And it can just
kind of float around all over
exactly.
the place. Or like a UFO.
Yeah. Oh, he made a UFO. It is actually commonly referred to as Tesla's UFO, his flying machine. And it's also believed his flying machine had eyes made of electro-optical lenses arranged in quadrants, giving the pilot a 360-degree view. Screens and monitors inside the console would provide directions, like to where he needed to
go. Okay, so like video cameras.
Pretty much. But anyway,
before video
1870s,
cameras.
Cameras were even a thing. So he was already picturing things that we can do today. He was picturing backup cameras in our cars.
That is pretty cool.
Is that insane?
Yeah. No, that's nuts.
And we did it. And that's why I think like these things, you know, even in Star Trek, like I mentioned in the beginning with the replicator, if you can dream it,
you can live it.
Chances are pretty good we can do it.
Well, I mean, tablets weren't a thing, but they were in Star Trek.
Is that incredible? Yeah. And I humans are just amazing.
Yeah.
I want you guys out there to know how amazing you are. That even if you're an artist, a scientist, a writer, a stay-at-home mom, a couch potato, you guys are amazing. Humans are absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to celebrate that, and the fact that we don't know, the fact that things could be missing. We don't know if they're missing. We don't know what's missing, but things have been used and we have copies of everything. But as of right now, as far as we know, all of the Tesla files are with, you know, in Serbia, and they're in a museum actually in Serbia.
I want to believe in that death ray. That's literally the takeaway I got from this was
I couldn't even believe
Sammy possibly could get his hands on a death ray and might actually be able to fulfill my life goal of taking over the world. Remember how I said in the last episode, if I was Grand Poobah of the Americas, this is how I do it with Tesla's death ray.
That's true. That's true. And now we have the death ray. Yes. Yeah. But if you can find the papers.
Okay.
Which even the FBI can't find them.
I will find them because that is a dream, a lifelong dream of mine.
We should tweet Donald Trump.
Dear Donald Trump, I would like to be the Grand Poobah of the Americas.
Good luck with that. Well, shall we take a break?
Yeah, we'll take a break and we'll be right back to talk about my cryptid.
Yay!
All right.
Ian and I have talked about doing like anti-ASMR.
Yeah.
Like nails on a chalkboard.
There's some of them that are really nice. Like some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But like the ones of people chewing, I can't do.
Uh-uh.
You know, the ones of people like rubbing balloons, I can't do. But like then there's ones of like people like brushing stuff. Like a paintbrush on canvas. Yeah. That I'm into.
Ooh.
Like that sounds really good. Like it's just this really you know, like or people like you know, like cutting stuff with like an X-Acto knife, like cutting out construction paper with
or
an
like
X-Acto knife.
A soft like shop sweeping broom on like polished cement.
Yeah.
That sounds like a nice noise.
You know, so there are some ASMR videos out there where I'm just like, yeah, that's my jam.
Yeah.
I like that.
But there are others that it's like.
Yeah. And then there's, like I said, the ones of people chewing.
That you can hear them talking like they're every bit of their mouth. Like, I don't need to hear bubbles pop in your mouth.
Even the whispering kind of bothers me. Like, it's okay sometimes, but most of the time, I'm just not into it.
Did that just rock the... I think Java just tapped on the door.
She did.
Java.
Yes, she did. I saw one video that was by Jenna Marbles.
Oh.
And she was, like, making fun. And she did, like, an ASMR mukbang unboxing video.
Oh,
like,
my God.
And gaming all in one. So, basically, she whispered the entire video. She unboxed her Chipotle.
She's so funny. Oh, my God.
And then she ate her Chipotle on the video. Like, because you know what mukbang is.
Yes, it's
like
do.
Korean eating videos.
I watched you do a birthday video.
Oh,
that
yeah,
was
that's
definitely
right.
Mukbang.
Yeah, my cake eating mukbang.
Yes. But, that was hysterical watching you fail.
She unboxed a bean, like a single bean.
A single bean.
You know, and then got on and like played like some video game while she was eating and slurping the food. And I was like, this grosses me out, but at the same time, it's hysterical because there's so many things going on here.
Oh, Jenna Marbles.
Okay, but anyway, so hi, we're back.
Hey, hi.
After you heard us ramble for a couple minutes. Okay, so we're back. We're going to talk about my cryptid now.
Yes, please do. Lay it on me.
This is one I've kind of wanted to talk about for a while, but I've just never gotten around to it. But anyway, okay, so this one is a lake monster. And now when you hear of lake monsters, usually a couple come to mind right away, which is Loch Ness Monster, Tahoe Tessie, or even Champ from Lake Champlain. But there are lake monsters everywhere. Like if you look at the like cryptid list, there's a whole section that's just lake and ocean sea serpents and monsters.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of them.
A lot of them.
So, and they're in just about every climate all over the world. But today we're going to go to the frosty north of British Columbia, Canada, to visit the Ogopogo that lives in the Okanagan Lake, Okanagan, Okanagan Lake. And it's called the Ogopogo.
Ooh, okay.
So the Ogopogo, or the Naitaka, as it is known to the First Nations people, has its origins in native legends from the area dating back to the 1700s. According to these legends, the Naitaka was more of a water spirit than an actual physical creature. It would demand live sacrifices anytime travelers attempted to cross the lake. So these travelers would routinely bring chickens or other small animals on their journeys in order to drop them in the water for the spirit. The modern legend of the beast, however, dates as far back as 1873. A description of the Ogopogo, it is 30 to 60 feet long or 10 to 20 meters long. It resembles a Bacillosaurus or Mosasaurus. Let me show you quick what those are so that you can see. So this is a Bacillosaurus.
Oh, ooh. Oh, it's kind of like a dachshund dolphin.
Yeah.
Dachshund.
It's like a really long dolphin with really short little flippers up front and then some teeth.
Yeah.
And then the Mosasaurus is this one, which was kind of made famous by Jurassic World.
Yes, that makes... Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, also, here's a quick picture of a statue of the Ogopogo that's outside the lake. It's cute.
It looks like Puff the Magic Dragon.
It's cute. Yeah, but it's this little Ogopogo statue. It's cute. I'll post all these to the Instagram. Okay, so yeah, resembles a Bacillosaurus or a Mosasaurus. Where was I? Often mistaken for a log until it moves. It has a head that's like a horse, a snake, a sheep, a seal, an alligator, or a goat, just depending on the description. But those are all the animals that its head kind of resembles.
Odd.
Horse, snake, sheep, seal, alligator, or goat.
Okay.
Okay. Fins or feet, depending on the description. Multi-humped. And then it can either be green, black, brown, or gray. Just depending.
Interesting. Depending on the lighting.
Yeah, depending on the lighting or, you know, time of day, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So, all right. So we're getting into sightings now. And I do have quite a few pictures, actually, with this one.
Cool.
It's kind of cool. First sighting comes from 1873, like I mentioned. This is the first recorded sighting by a Caucasian named Mrs. Susan Allison.
Susan.
She was a British Columbian pioneer and author.
Susan Allison. She's got two first names. I don't trust her already.
Right? So she was a British Columbian pioneer and author. And the sighting was near her home of Sunnyside Ranch, which is the location of today's Quail Gate Winery in West Kelowna.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds beautiful.
Mrs. Allison was very specific in her description of seeing a snake-like creature, which closely mirrored the often repeated local native legend about the Naitaka, the water demon. So basically, you know, the Naitaka was kind of described as a snake-like spirit, and that's, you know, the description she gave kind of matched that description. The next sighting comes from 1914. A group of Nicola Valley and West Bank Native Americans discovered a strange carcass near Rattlesnake Island. The carcass weighed in at 400 pounds and was between 5 and 6 feet long. It was bluish gray in color and it had flippers and a tail. Most people believe the carcass was a manatee, which, by the way, manatees are no longer endangered.
Yay!
I just saw that this week.
Sorry, manatees.
Just like random thought popped into my head. But yeah, manatees, apparently, according to an article I read this past week, they're no longer endangered.
Yay!
So anyway.
Sea cows.
Sea cows. Boop, boop, boop. Most people believed the carcass was a manatee, although it was unclear how a manatee could have gotten in Lake Okanagan. Right? A small sect of people supported the idea that the carcass belonged to Ogopogo and that the beast's long neck had been detached as the carcass decomposed.
Ew.
Because it was a headless body.
It makes sense why it was so short. I was like 400 to 500 pounds and only like 5 to 6 feet long.
Yeah.
That's really squat.
Yeah.
Like, and so it would make sense if it had lost its head that it should have been much longer. Interesting.
Yeah, so basically they're saying that the long neck and head was detached when it decomposed. One of the biggest sightings came from 1926 when, and it's a short little blurb, but it was still one of the, like, most people saw it. Occupants of about 30 cars along the Okanagan Mission Beach reported seeing the Ogopogo.
Really?
So 30 cars worth of people all saw it at once. And that's the whole blurb. I, for some reason, despite being 30 people's accounts, I could only find one sentence about it.
Oh, but no one had accounts.
Yeah. Like, I mean, and I checked dozens of websites, and every website was just like, in 1926, 30 cars of people saw it moving on. And I was like, what about those 30 people, though? I want to hear their accounts.
That's like when they say, like, 30% of Americans drink more than 6 cups of coffee. Well, no one asked me. Like, come on.
But yeah, so it's like, yeah. And like I said, multiple websites. That was the most I could get about that sighting. It's like dozens of people saw it, and we don't have anything more than a sentence.
There's no accounts. No actual accounts. Interesting.
Yeah. Next sighting comes from 1947. A number of boaters all saw the creature at the same time. One of the witnesses, a Mr. Cray, gave a detailed description. He said it had a long, sinuous body, 30 feet in length, consisting of about 5 undulations, apparently separated from each other by a 2-foot space. I don't know. Yeah, basic. I guess just I'm making weird motions with my hand, like the dolphin motion.
I'm trying to picture. Yep, I see.
In which part of the or in which that part of the undulations would have been underwater? So basically, every 2 or 3 feet of water, there was a lump.
Kind of like you typically see Nessie, I guess. Yeah. Kind of. But it's more of a snake, but not like a.
But
I guess
going
a snake
up and
is
down
kind of
in the water.
Yeah.
So it's like
that makes sense.
You see the head and neck go into the water,
and then
2 feet. And then a little lump, and then 2 feet, and then another little lump. And he said that there were about 5 of those above the water undulations.
Weird. Ooh, that's long. Yeah. Ooh.
30 feet total.
Ooh.
So 30 divided by 5 is...
Can you imagine the back problems on that thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, no. I can imagine the back problems on an average millennial, though.
That's true. That's very true. Our backpacks are far too heavy. I got made fun of for my rolling backpack. Anyway...
Okay, I keep losing my place. Yes. There appeared to be a forked tail, of which only one half came above the water.
Mm.
So the tail forked off and the two halves moved
differently, weird.
I guess.
Ooh, like a flippers. Like,
yeah, flippers.
Cool.
Or something. From time to time, the whole thing submerged and came up again. So, next sighting comes from 1959. Mr. and Mrs. R.H. Miller and Mr. and Mrs. Pat Martin reported seeing a tremendous creature with a snake-like head and a blunt nose swimming some 250 feet behind their motorboat. The group watched the unknown animal for over 3 minutes, after which it submerged.
Hmm.
Next one comes from 1968, and this one actually has a video attached to it. So I'll read the description first, and then I'll show you the video. A man named Arthur Folden shot the most compelling video footage of Ogopogo. In Folden's video, an animal is moving across the lake, leaving behind a tremendous wake. It's really blurry, like 1950s footage.
I see. Okay. Oh. What the heck?
Yeah, you can see it like a weird shadowy shape moving across.
It's like kind of sort of moving and then it jumps forward. Ooh, and then you kind of see the flippers. Ooh. It does have, like, a weird head. I see why they say it's so
like
many different things.
Horse, sheep, goat, snake, alligator-like.
Ooh. Ooh.
It's,
I
like, a
know.
30-second-long video, but it's so blurry and, like, grainy that
might,
you can't really
might
tell.
Might be a seal to
it
me.
It might be a duck.
Might be a duck.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'll see if I can't post that somewhere, like, the Facebook page
How
or
weird,
something.
Though. Ooh.
Right? Next sighting, I don't have any description. I just have a photo, and this is from 1976. Okay, so this is the 1976 photo.
Oh.
You can see a couple of different humps.
Like a bunch of lines, that don't belong there in the water. But it could also be islands, I guess. But if somebody took a picture of it, they it obviously had, like,
or
stuck
was
around.
Moving,
I was moving.
So that's 1976. Let's see. Okay, nice. Next sighting comes from 1978. Bill Stasiuk? S-T-E-C-I-U-K. Stasiuk.
Stasiuk, probably.
Stasiuk. Bill Stasiuk was crossing the bridge from the west side of Okanagan Lake in October of 1978 towards Kelowna. He caught a movement in the lake and immediately stopped his car. All the traffic behind him also stopped, and he was soon joined at the rail by about 20 other onlookers. All 20 or so people saw what appeared to be a head with three black humps behind it, perhaps 60 meters away, protruding out of the water. Bill and the other onlookers watched the creature swimming for nearly a minute, after which time it disappeared beneath the water's surface, leaving behind a substantial wake. This sighting made a believer out of Bill, and he vowed to try to one day search for Ogopogo. So this was another big sighting. About 20 people saw it at once.
No, but like, we only have the one guy's
video.
Account. Yeah, video.
Yeah, like we've got other photos though. But that's like the only video.
Ooh, cool.
But no, like honestly, everything I've read has actually said that the Ogopogo has more sightings and more grounding in reality than even the Loch Ness Monster does.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the Loch Ness Monster has a ton of different sightings, but the Ogopogo has more and more actual like photographic evidence and stuff like that.
Did they say why they call it the Ogopogo?
No, I never actually found like a reason for that, which is weird. Next thing comes from 1981, and this one also has a photo. This is the most famous photo. It's called the Watchlin photo. This one's all a quote, so I'm just going to read the quote. It was right around regatta time. I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's when they sail. So a regatta is basically like a big sailboat race.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it was right about regatta time, July 24th, 1981, around 1 p.m. We were in a rented ski boat and were running on the west side of the lake in the vicinity of Peachland, just a bit northwest of the tip of Rattlesnake Island. A water skier had just passed us going fast in the opposite direction to us when suddenly a creature surfaced directly in front of us facing a northeasterly direction. We saw no head, just a body, my thoughts being that the head might be lying flat just below the surface. At first, I thought it was the wake of the other boat, but then realized that the boat's wake was going in the other direction. As we came closer, the creature broke into a fast-paced, undulating motion. I pointed our boat directly at it, but as we neared it, the creature dove, causing a large, frothy whirlpool. I turned the boat around and could see the creature 2 or 3 feet below in the water. It moved at great speed, at least halfway across the lake before it dove deeper and out of sight. The creature was at least 50 feet long and seemed to be either very dark green or black.
Hmm.
Okay, and this is the only photo I could find about that, but it's apparently the most famous one.
Huh. Interesting.
It's a couple of little like
little humps. Blips.
Yep,
little couple blips. like a white cap around it.
Mm-hmm. The next sighting comes from 1986. This one's actually a little long story, so I'm going to go ahead and read the whole thing because it was really fascinating. This one, though, wasn't reported until recently. Like, so the sighting was from 1986, but I don't think they reported it until, like, the last, like, 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
But they said, I have not reported this story publicly before now, as it is just too unbelievable. The sighting occurred in late July of 1986. I was paddling a canoe near Ellison Provincial Park, and my two girls were trolling for fish. They were about 8 and 10 years old at this time. Since it was dusk and the stars were beginning to be visible, we began to head toward the dog beach at Ellison to head back to camp. It was a warm night, the lake was smooth as glass, and it was a very quiet evening with no motorboaters. We were about 100 meters out from the beach when we noticed a rounded object on the water. The object was not moving. Thinking it was something like a play toy or an inner tube, I decided to paddle over and investigate. As we approached, the first thing I noticed was a strong fishy smell.
Mm.
Something's fishy. Mm. Something fishy this way comes.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
glove, glove.
When the bow of the canoe was within a meter or so of the object, we noticed it was about 1 foot wide by 4 feet long and had two rows of arrowhead-shaped scales running its length. It was dark green in color.
How weird. Right? Ooh.
We sat there a few seconds and asked the kids to reel in their lines. Then we heard a kind of moaning or low growling noise.
We get realized, out of there.
Right?
Oh, God, get out of there.
Because I guarantee it's not speaking whale.
Oh, like God. Dory. Yeah.
We realized that it was about 5 to 10 meters further ahead. There was a large head facing away from us, silhouetted against the dusk sky. The head appeared to be about the size of a horse head, and it appeared to have horizontal, conical-shaped structures like horns. My kids turned to ask what this was, and I said, the Ogopogo. At this juncture, realizing what I had just said, my hair stood straight up. And my older daughter freaked out and demanded we head to shore. So apparently the mother was just, mother or father, I don't know, was just like, oh yeah, that's the Ogopogo. Oh crap.
Oh God.
Didn't realize what they'd said until after they'd said it.
Oh no, run! Oh God.
The creature appeared to notice we were there and slowly moved away. It did not move with any undulations, but moved slowly with the head and hump in the same positions. Its movement seemed consistent with the idea of a large body under the water and likely under my canoe and a long folding neck. After moving off about 50 meters, it turned as if to take a look at us, then it submerged. This whole incident lasted about 2 minutes. I did have a camera in the boat with me, but was just too shocked to think of trying to use it. We have often returned to Ellison Park to camp and paddle, but I have never seen anything like it again.
You know what? And I don't blame you for not grabbing your camera, because there are plenty of times that things happen that I'm actually shocked people end up with as much footage as they do sometimes, because
it's so spur of the moment.
How do
you have
think
the
to grab your camera? And it must be those people that are just always on their phone anyway. They just kind of like pick up.
Yeah, but this was 1986.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, I'm thinking about today. But yeah, even then, like I don't blame him for not picking up the camera. Yeah.
No, like I wouldn't have the wherewithal to do it.
No.
You know, like, I mean, even as much as I want to see something like that, if I actually did, I would not have the presence of mind to actually think to do that.
And it must have happened so fast. Oh my God, to experience that. Woo. Woo.
The next one comes in or from 2000. A marathon swimmer named Daryl Ellis reported being accompanied for a short distance during his swim by two large creatures as he passed Rattlesnake Island. He described them as one being 6 to 9 meters or 20 to 30 feet long and the second being smaller. Hmm. They followed him for quite a while and then disappeared. When he swam near the Okanagan Lake floating bridge in Kelowna, a creature with a large eye the size of a grapefruit came within 9 meters to get a close look at him.
Mm. Yeah.
The next sightings come from 2001 and 2002. I don't have any info on them other than that these were pictures taken by a man, Dan Basaraba. He took both of these pictures. So this is the 2001 photo.
Weird.
It's very strange looking.
That, ooh, that's like three green lights in the middle of the...
Like awake.
Awake, basically. Yeah, that's weird.
And then this is the 2002 photo, which that to me just looks like ripples.
It does, yeah, this looks like awake.
Yeah, that doesn't look like anything. That just looks like ripples. Next photo and sighting comes from September 7th of 2006. Michelle and Giles Beliveau, which I love the name Giles, it just... My name's Giles.
Giles.
From West Bank, took this photo of a form just below the water south of the Kelowna Mission area on the east side of the Okanagan Lake. The photo was taken from their boat at 2:30 p.m. They estimated the object was about 25 feet long and approximately 50 feet from the boat. This picture is dope.
Whoa!
It looks like a dolphin almost, which kind of fits with the like Bacillosaurus.
Yeah, but I could also see the manatee, kind of.
Yep.
Whoa!
But I mean, that's a pretty clear picture.
That is. Oh my gosh! Yeah.
And it's been checked, and it's not doctored, apparently.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
That is bizarre. I mean, the only thing I could think of, like, other than that would be a sandbar, but I've never seen a sandbar
with
look like that either.
And a mouth? Yeah,
yeah,
no, me either.
You know.
Okay, so I've got one more big sighting and then, like, another little tiny part. So next sighting comes from June 24th, 2017. This guy says, my wife, son, and I were on the boat around 1:30 in the afternoon, heading back to the Penticton Marina in the south. My son was driving as I was watching the stuff in the water, or watching for stuff in the water. As we were heading south, I told him to watch out for the sea dew ahead as he was jumping around and making big waves. I don't know what a sea dew is.
Like a sea dew, like a...
A ski-dew?
Yeah, like, yeah, but or there's like sea dews and ski-dews. They're the same thing, basically. Oh.
So a jet ski.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard it called a sea-dew before. I've heard them called ski-dews before.
Yeah, it's a brand name.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about water recreational vehicles.
Yeah.
I'm from a poor, you know, lower middle class family.
My
in the
first
Midwest.
TV job required me to. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So told him to watch out for the sea dew ahead as it was jumping around and making big waves. My son asked what side we should pass him on. I told him to wait until we got closer as he may change directions. When we started to get closer, about 300 feet away, we all noticed there was no jet ski there, but this... Oh, I should have just kept continued reading and I would have figured it out.
That's what happens when you copy and paste notes.
I see what you do there. Okay.
See-do.
That was terrible. Let's see. Da-da-da-da-da. There was no jet ski there, but this object that had three perfect symmetrical waves coming off of it. My wife said slow down as she thought it was a kayaker. We slowed down and approached the area and told my wife and son to grab their phones and start taking video.
Get your phones!
Now, this is the weird part. Not one of us had our phones. That's the weird part in 2017, of course.
Not the weird thing in the water. The weird part is that you didn't have your phones.
I mean, it's kind of fair. And he goes on to say, that never happens.
To be honest, I wouldn't bring my phone in a boat either.
I don't think
I
would
either.
Because
if the boat capsizes, my life is gone.
Yeah,
so.
I guess. So anyway.
It's not like I'm going to be sitting there like, I didn't spill my beer or drown my phone.
Okay, so anyway, the object that was making the waves disappears, but the waves were huge, bigger than the wake my 25-foot boat was making. They were these perfect three waves rolling away to the west, not the east. There were no boats in the area either, and a super calm day. He spelled calm, C-O-M.
It's a nice calm day.
I copied this word for word because it was a quote. But
bone apple teeth.
Bone apple teeth. But whatever, like, place published this quote spelled calm, which is C-A-L-M-C-O-M, like .com. It was a super calm day.
.com.
That's going in the title, a super calm day.
Super.com day.
So we are not sure what we saw, but the size had to be huge as we thought it was a jet ski jumping around. The picture is so vivid in our minds. And then 2018, there were three sightings in as many weeks at the end of 2018. So like in the last couple of months of 2018, in 3 weeks, there were three sightings of the
I'm surprised we don't have a whole bunch more like super detailed pictures.
I know, right?
Now that's hard to believe.
Yeah. So explanations as to what it is that it's just logs, because there are actually a lot of logs floating around in that lake. I don't know why I didn't figure out why there
it's
were
not
logs.
A log in lake.
Maybe. But yeah, there's a bunch of logs floating.
We have
in the
a
lake.
Lot of debris in Folsom Lake.
Yeah. So it could just be logs, as it is often mistaken for that anyway. Beavers, waterfowl, other assorted wildlife, which is the normal explanations for any sort of lake monster.
Yep.
A Bacillosaurus, which I showed you. A Mosasaurus, which I showed you. And once again, my favorite, a Plesiosaur.
Oh, of course. You know. Or a Leopleurodon, Charlie.
Or a Leopleurodon, Charlie. But yeah, so
I like it.
So that's the Ogopogo.
Ogopogo.
I love the name of it. It's so much
too.
Fun to say the Ogopogo.
Ogopogo. It sounds like a great deal.
Like a BOGO?
Like a BOGO.
Like a Ogopogo.
Ogopogo. That sounds like a deal. It's just out of this world. Just drowning in savings.
Right. Oh my God. Oh,
but that's awesome. That's okay. Really cool though. Yeah. I like that. And it's kind of, you know, now we've done.
We've done three lake monsters.
We have.
Now.
We've done Nessie, we've done Tessie, and now we've done the Ogopogo. I like it.
Like I said, there's so many lake monsters and sea monsters out there. Like that, any cryptid list you look at, sea monsters and lake monsters have their own section because there's just so many of them.
I like that they're all different too.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, Nessie.
They've got
has
some similarities and some differences.
And how the cultures color the character, like the. You know, how there's still some similarities across the lakes, but there's also how local folklore colors the way it's interpreted, the way it's seen,
the way the legend came to be. Yeah. It's really neat. Nessie, though, is obviously the most famous one.
Of course,
And you'll notice if I do any other lake monsters, a lot of them have names that rhyme with Nessie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you get Tessie, but there's also, like, I mean, a lot of the lake monsters have a name that rhymes with Nessie.
It's just the most well-known.
Just because it's the most well-known and it kind of gives them their moment in the spotlight, I guess.
Interesting.
But
interesting.
Yeah. But the Ogopogo has the most unique name out of all of them.
I've never heard of that one.
And like I said, I couldn't find any reason as to why it was called the Ogopogo.
Interesting.
Other than it comes from the Okanagan Lake.
Ogopogo.
Maybe.
Huh.
I don't know.
Interesting.
But
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah. So that's all we've got for this week. We will be back in May.
May, yeah.
Actually, The next episode you hear us on will be our 1 year anniversary.
It will be. Yay.
So that's exciting.
Yeah. So we're celebrating. Hey, we've been doing this for a year.
Yeah.
I was just, while you were talking just now, I was thinking, wow, we've been doing this for almost a year. Yeah. That's insane.
It's hard to believe, isn't it? And just think, like, when we started out, we were like, oh, we're only going to do one episode a month. And now we're doing two.
And we're rocking it.
And we're rocking it.
And you guys are loving it. Yeah. And you guys are so supportive, too.
We love you guys so much. Yay. Our little conspirators.
Thank you.
So, all right. Well, thank you guys again for listening. We love and appreciate one of you. You know where to find us on all of our social media and everywhere else. You know, share us around. Help us, you know, find new conspirators, you know, because the best way to, you know, make a conspiracy big is to pass it on in secret.
Exactly. You know? Plus, you know, especially if you go visit www.conspiriesandcryptids.com. I'm going to say that again. www.conspiriesandcryptids.com. You guys, I know because I'm always checking, like somebody waiting for an employer to respond on your application. For people to visit our website, I'm waiting for that number to tick up. I'm waiting for those emails and stuff. So I want you guys to go check us out, and we're waiting for you guys to come chat with us. So go check out our Patreon, go check out our website, and go listen to us. Share us with your friends.
Yeah, because, you know, we want to be in everybody's ears. We want to spread the conspirator love.
Absolutely.
That sounds gross.
Be like the Illuminati. Illuminate yourselves.
All right, guys. We will see you again in 2 weeks.
We will.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptopod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.